Turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporters with Tony Maz. Brought to you by Big Y Grocery Store, T-Mobile, Ron Bouchard's Auto Stores, Integrity from Marvin Windows and Doors, TestTrips.com, Acura of Auburn, Anderson McQuay, Direct Federal Credit Union, AceTicket.com, WFXT TV, and Mohegan Sun. On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
All right, welcome into the Baseball Reporters Night 2. For those of you who were not listening at the end of the program last night, I meant to say this earlier in the show. I did not do so, but one of the new elements we're trying to incorporate into the Baseball Reporters this year is a digital component, an online component. Twice a week, every Friday, I'm going to write as well. Okay, I'm going to write for our website, the Baseball Reporters Behind the Seams blog. You get it, Murray?
I do, yes.
You get it, behind the seams?
See how that works.
Isn't that cute?
Mm-hmm.
So today was the first day we put that up there. You can check it out. And here's the ultimate logic to it. Let me just get this out of the way. Okay, here's the logic. This show is not simulcast. Okay, the 2 to 6 show is simulcast. But there are some things that don't always translate in radio. And frankly, sometimes I don't explain things all that well. So pictures help, diagrams help, that sort of thing. It's not supposed to be a replication of what goes on in this show. It's supposed to be something that helps... or that I would say augments the show, enhances it, etc. So every Tuesday and Friday, we will have that up on the website, the Baseball Reporters blog, where we'll get into things with the Red Sox, get into things with baseball, and try to explain them maybe in more detail than we can do on a one-hour talk show every night. In the interim, 617-779-0985 is your number. We'll open up the phones right away for those of you that have thoughts on the Red Sox and on Major League Baseball. As always, you can call in anything and everything. But I do like to introduce an angle, as I like to say, or a topic at the beginning of every show. So Murray, let me ask you this question. Okay, because the Red Sox, based on wins and losses, had a good spring. They went 22-9, which Alex Cora was all too eager to tell us about their win-loss record. And Cora said, you know, how did the spring go? And he says, well, you know, Jimmy, you have the cut, right? And believe me, I tell you, Cora was joking. Because if you listen to the whole cut, he gets to the end of it and says wins and losses don't matter. But when he was asked about the positives in spring, here's what he said.
I mean, besides the friggin' best record in baseball.
No, look, he's no fool. Okay, Cora is no fool. And I think he's had a good spring. But why wouldn't he? I mean, what has happened there that has been some sort of major challenge for the manager? It was an uneventful offseason. It was an uneventful camp. So until Cora is faced with his first crisis, we're not going to know about Alex Cora. So let me ask you this question, Murray, and to the listeners as well. What means more to the 2018 Red Sox? The departure of John Farrell or the arrival of Alex Cora? And do you follow me? I know they're connected. But in other words, is it more about the fact that Farrell is gone? Or is it more about the fact that Cora, specifically Cora, is here?
Based on the statements by Dustin Pedroia to our competitor yesterday, I feel like it's going to be about the removal of John Farrell. I think you could probably put a roll of paper towels as manager in that clubhouse this year. And these guys feel like, again, based on some of the comments that Pedroia made, and that it felt like he was a bit of a taskmaster, that those guys are going to feel free. It was almost like how you saw the team respond in 2013 after Bobby Valentine. They hated his guts. It felt like that's maybe how it was at the end with Farrell. So it doesn't really matter who's going to be there. They're going to benefit from new blood.
Okay, now that 2013 team, we all know, went on to win the World Series. Farrell was not a rookie manager like Cora is now. This is the first time Cora has managed anywhere. Farrell had 4 years with the Blue Jays where he made some mistakes. But when we go back and look at it, Farrell made some of the same mistakes in 2013 that he made in any other year. I mean, he was never a great game manager. That was apparent from the very first postseason. So again, it had more to do with the departure of the predecessor than it did with the arrival of the new guy. So let's not give too much credit to the guy who came in. All he's doing is following a guy that everybody else hated. And as it pertains to the Red Sox, I think people are completely missing it, or some people are missing it, as to what will ultimately determine this team's success or failure. So to me, a good example for this sort of thing is go back to 2003. Okay, in 2003, the manager got in the way. That Red Sox team had the talent to win. They had it. Now, they had to go out and pick up a couple of pieces. They went out and got Schilling and they got Folk, and I'm not saying that they were small pieces. But they had Game 7 of the LCS won in New York, and the manager got in the way. I'm not sure Farrell got in the way of this team the last 2 years. You can say that you didn't like him. You can say that he wasn't a great game manager, and both would be true. Okay? The liking thing, obviously, is an opinion. But at the end of the day, did the Red Sox really have the kind of high-end talent? And more importantly, tell you what, let's leave talent out of it for a minute. More importantly, did they have the makeup that the team in 03 had? Because I look back at that team in 03, and if you remember that year, that team had balls, huge ones. They had comeback after comeback after comeback. They were relentless. They were high character, highly competitive players. And I told this story earlier in the day. I'm going to tell it again now. After they lost Game 7 to the Yankees in New York, Grady Little got fired. They came back with Terry Francona as manager. During that winter, they tried to get Alex Rodriguez. He went to the Yankees. In fact, that was the story that broke right before the start of camp. So everybody shows up at spring training, and the first thing they're asking is, you lost to the Yankees, and now they have A-Rod. And you know what I remember Red Sox players saying? To a man, we'll beat them anyway. We'll win anyway. We don't care who they got. We know we're good enough. We will beat them anyway. So this team, I just wonder if they have that same sort of edge. That same sort of mentality. Because it feels like this is my question about the Red Sox all of last year. Do they have that edge? Do they lose after a year like last year? And do they go home? And the guys who lost say, you know what? We're going to come back. We'll add a bat. And we are going to be better. I'm going to be hungrier. We're going to be pissed off. And we're going to win. Because that's what I remember from that team in 03. They were on a mission in 2004. A team that loses should be on a mission. A team that gets its ass kicked in the playoffs, a team that has talent, and then the manager gets fired, that team should be on a mission. If they really do blame John Farrell, they should show up in camp and say, we got the manager fired, which is on us. Now we're going to go out and win it. He blocked our path, but either way, we shouldn't take pleasure or joy in the fact that we got a manager fired. Now here we are, and we're going to go out and win it. Because we have the balls and we have the talent and we're going to win it. That's what they should say. So this brings me to comments made by Mookie Betts and J.D. Martinez, and more Mookie than J.D. Martinez. Jimmy, this was actually during a game broadcast with the Cubs, is that right?
Yes, this was when ESPN had Mookie Betts mic'd up during a defensive inning for Mookie, and this is what he said when he was asked about expectations.
Okay, so this was something they did in the All-Star game. If you remember, they had, I think it was Bryce Harper wearing a mic in the field. And it's a nice little
George Springer, I believe, did it as well.
Okay, so Mookie was asked about the goals for the Red Sox in 2018. Here's what he said.
What are your hopes for the season, Mookie, for the team and for yourself?
Well, obviously to win the World Series, but I want to just be consistent. You know, I had a rough year going up and down last year, and a lot of learning, though. So I think we have a good team to at least make a run again, that's for sure.
Okay, so the end of that, a team to make a run again, that's for sure. What run did they make? They won the division, but they didn't make a run. They get their asses kicked again. They lost in four. The year before, they lost in three. So what's a run? Winning one game in the playoffs? That brings me back to what Xander Bogaerts said last year in the division series. Like, well, you know, we did win a game this year. Great. So this year, if they win two, is that okay? Like, there's just something about the guys on this team. And let me separate the personal from the professional. They're all good guys. Certainly seems like they are. They all seem like good kids. Bradley, Betts, Bogaerts, they're bright, good-natured, likable guys. Okay? And when I say likable, I mean, it feels to me like they're good citizens. The way David Price treated Dennis Eckersley makes him unlikable and it gives the team an identity. But the young guys, they feel like a good collection of likable kids. And everybody I talk to over there tells me the same thing. You know, they really are good guys. And I don't doubt that. I don't doubt it for a second. But But when one of them takes a fastball under the chin, does he get up looking for blood? Or when one of them gets wiped out on double play, does he say to the base runner, you come in like that and next time, I'm going to put my cleats through your chest? Do they, like, where's that anger? Where's that edge? Because the 0-3 team that became the 0-4 team, they had it. That team played with attitude. And they played with attitude in 0-7. And say what you want about David Ortiz, who was in many ways the gentle giant. David Ortiz had attitude. David Ortiz had the ass when he played. And he understood that there was a certain amount of intensity required to beat someone at the biggest moments. So with this team, that's what I wonder. So Alex Cora, yes, the departure of John Farrell will help. It feels to me like they relate to Cora. Maybe they can communicate a little bit more. Maybe that can lead to some sort of openness where these guys can start to show a streak in them that can make me believe that they can beat good teams at big times. I would hope. Because to me, that's what's missing. It's that edge. It's that attitude. That's what's missing. And there was some power missing too. Okay, obviously. There was some power missing from the lineup. Which brings us to the change in hitting coaches and how much of an impact that could have. And some comments made by last year's hitting coach, which we'll get to after this.
Boston's most comprehensive discussion of everything baseball. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Here's the thing I find most amazing. Baseball gets caught up.
You don't quit on your team.
When you want to win, play through anything.
The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
You know, I think our approach last year was lacking offensively, and we had issues that the players were already talking about. So I don't really need to talk about it, but I agree with what's been said.
It's John Henry early in spring training talking about the two things that really affected the Red Sox significantly last year. Offensive approach, and also the manager, right? They're talking about the comments made early in camp by Xander Bogaerts and Mookie Betts that there were that guys weren't happy, et cetera, which relates to John Farrell, which relates to Alex Cora. The other one concerns the offensive approach. And Chili Davis, the former hitting coach, obviously was fired. He spoke last night about the comments that Henry made. We'll get to those comments in just a second, because to me that's the other part of this whole story, is the approach of the hitters. And again, I come back to the players. Yes, the departure of John Farrell will make everybody happier. How are the Red Sox going to get these guys to play better? How are they going to get to their ceiling? And again, to change who they are fundamentally, can these guys be more competitive and edgier than they are? Because I do think to win, you got to have some edge and some nastiness to you. I do think you need some of that. We'll get to that here in just a minute. But first, I want to get to your phone calls. Brian is in Whitman, wants to talk about David Price. Go ahead, Brian.
What's going on, Matt?
What do you got?
Hey, just wanted to say I got connections over there at Tufts. I heard you quite the second baseman. But let me get to my point. So I don't know why that there was no talk about Price, keeping Price in that role we had him in the last playoffs when he was, pretty much locked down to come in with someone with a short start, come in and give you two, three innings in relief. I just don't understand why there was never any discussion about that. How do you feel about that? You think it's the money?
Well, it's a big part of it, Brian, and I let him go. Before I get to the answer, can I just say this? Because this happened last night, too. People would call up and say something or make a crack about something, my past or wherever I played. Can we just get to the topic? It's an hour show. We got to keep it moving, okay? So I prefer the...
Grab ass is what you're
saying. Yeah, no grab ass and no, like, one-liners. I don't need a joke at the beginning. Let's just get to the meat of your call, okay? Let's get right to the issue. With David Price, he was dominating out of the bullpen. They're paying him too much to have him throw two innings in April. And the other thing is they won't get as much out of him. They're not paying him $31 million to be a middle reliever or an Andrew Miller. They're not doing that. They need to get more out of him. Price is a key guy. He had a good spring. And when I say that, I mean he looked healthy. I saw him in one of the games that I was down there. I thought for the most part he looked good. He wasn't throwing the ball as hard as he was in October, but I wouldn't expect him to. The fact that he was airing it out and looking like he looked late last season suggested to me that he was healthy. Frank is in Providence. Go, Frank. Frank, you there?
Yeah. Oh, sorry, Tony. Yeah, I take your point on, you know, sort of the edge issue and you know, more competitiveness. I do think that 04 team, you know, they had the perfect mix. They were like a perfect storm. You had your, like, steely-eyed assassins, like, you know, I think particularly among the pitchers, you know, Embry, Schilling, Kimlin, Pedro, obviously, and I suppose some of the position players too, but they also had a certain kind of calm about them, and they never gave up, even when things got tough, which obviously proved pivotal. But to me, the example of 04 is very appropriate to your original question when you opened the show in terms of what we can expect from these Red Sox. That team adopted the personality of the manager.
No, they didn't.
And
no, they
I
didn't.
I think they did.
No,
well,
they
I
didn't.
I respectfully disagree. Because I think that Francona was a guy who had a wicked inner fire, super competitive, but never really showed it to the media, you know, never called out players publicly, never did anything like that. But that guy, when he did throw a nutty, whether it was a ball and strike call that he flipped out about, or, you know, anything privately during the course of, you know, the managerial season, I just think that team assumed his character.
Nope, Frank, listen, respectfully, you're wrong. I let you go. You're wrong. Terry Francona was not the reason they won it. And Terry Francona got a lot of credit. But let me tell you, competitively, they were who they were before Francona got there. Francona was smart enough to recognize it and to not get in the way, which is the mistake that Grady Little made. But competitively, you're telling me Terry Francona, Curt Schilling took on the personality of Terry Francona when they brought him in, and he was an addition. Or that Pedro took on the personality of Terry Francona, or Kevin Millar, or Gabe Kapler, or Jason Veritek, those guys took on the personality.
You know, especially the first two you named; those guys were legendary hard asses. They didn't need a man. They didn't take on anybody's personality. That's
Veritek. No. Those guys were competitive, feisty guys. That's who they were, and they were good guys. But you didn't want to get in a fight with them. Okay, and this team feels like good guys who wouldn't fight you. They would, and I'm not encouraging fist fights. I'm telling you though that. If that team had to fight, they would fight, which we saw. This team, I wonder about. I mean, this is a stupid thing to say, like connecting A to B. Did they have a brawl last year?
No, I don't think so.
I mean, I can't remember them ever even being close to one.
About the only thing that
the
came...
The Pedroia thing.
Yeah, the Pedroia thing against the Baltimore Orioles.
But that's them. Maine. That's not me. That's them.
Okay, so like, you know, to me... Where is that competitive streak that where they look at the other side and say, we want to beat your ass, we don't like you? Do they feel that way about the Yankees? Do they really feel that way? Or does David Price just joke about it at the beginning of spring training? So I just wonder about the personalities on the team. That's what I wonder about. Doesn't mean they're bad guys. Don't misconstrue what I'm saying. But do they have that edge? Is there that edge there? Which brings me to some of these comments, by the way, about the hitters and Chili Davis. We played the sound for you from John Henry at the beginning of the show saying he didn't love their approach at the plate. Chili Davis was asked about it last night when the Red Sox played the Cubs, and they played again today. Davis's answer to Henry's criticisms? We did what we had to do last year to win the division and move on to the playoffs. Unfortunately, we didn't have success in the playoffs. That was disappointing, too. I don't take that personally. I think the time that I spent in Boston, that John Henry and the whole organization was very, very good to me, so I have no ill feelings at all. Then he goes on to the whole launch angle and analytics and team's approach at the plate, and Davis says, I don't know if I can teach Dustin Pedroia launch angle or Christian Vasquez launch angle. I don't know if that's going to help them or hurt them. I think I worked with my hitters for what works best for them. We try to add that. The launch angle thing is not something I'm opposed to. But if you're not a home run hitter, why would you be hitting fly balls? You're just going to make outs. Okay, so let me ask you now. When you look at those guys, or you look at the guys on this roster, and let's leave Pedroia out of it. Okay, because Pedroia played on championship teams. But is Mookie Betts a home run hitter in the classic sense? Or is he a guy with great bat speed that will hit the ball out of the ballpark if you make a mistake? Andrew Benintendi, is he a home run hitter? Or is, again, or is he a guy that will hit mistakes out of the ballpark? Xander Bogaerts, is he a home run hitter? Or is he a guy that wants to shoot singles to the opposite field? So what I'm getting at is, it's great that they have a new hitting coach too. Okay, and it's Tim Hyers from the Dodgers, and the Dodgers hit a ton of home runs, and the whole idea is to put the ball in the air and try to hit it out of the ballpark. That's great. Is Xander Bogaerts really willing to do it? Does he have the mentality to do it? Or is he just by nature a more passive personality that's going to get up there and say, I'm more inclined to take a pitch? I mean, last year Bogaerts made a comment to the effect of, or maybe it was this spring, yeah, you know, there were times I went up there last year trying to pull the trigger on the first pitch, and for whatever reason, I just couldn't do it. Because it's not who he is. It's not how he wants to hit. So to me, again, some of this is innate. Some of it is who you are and how you approach the game. And these guys feel to me a little bit more passive, and the game now requires offensively aggressive hitters. Mike's in Southboro. Go, Mike.
Hey, Matt. I think you might have already answered my question with the character of the fight of this team, because I loved the old rivalry. I loved the hatred. I loved everything that was here. And then we got Schilling, who already hated the Yankees and already beat them in 0-1 and just wanted to smash them again. So what I would love to see to start the season when we play the Yankees, and I know it's a dink move and I'm sure it will never happen, I would love to see first inning, first pitch, first batter, Price just hit the first batter right straight in the back, have a bench clearing draw, get the hatred and the rivalry going again, and let's go back to it. Yankees suck.
Okay, so look, Mike, you know, there was a little thing with the Yankees at the end of last year, but if you remember, it was precipitated by Nunez when he bunted on CeCe Sabathia, and there was some tension there. Those were good games. And I think that Nunez brings some of that, which is one of the reasons I like that about them bringing him back. I like what Nunez adds to the clubs in terms of intensity. So maybe that's a good way to look at it. When you look at these guys, would you describe Mookie Betts as intense? Or Jackie Bradley as intense? Bogaerts, would you describe him as intense? And I'm talking about on the field now. On the field. Now let me go back to some of those guys that played. And again, it's a while ago and they were a unique team, that 03-04 bunch. But Johnny Damon was intense. Maybe not off the field, but in the games with that group, he was intense. So was Millar. So was Orlando Cabrera. So was Varitek. So was Pedro. So was Schilling. They were all intense. These guys feel like it's a game. Those guys felt like it was their job and their livelihood. And I don't know if the Red Sox can get this out of those guys or whether it's even in them. I don't know if Cora can. So yes, they'll be happier now that John Farrell's gone. If Cora can tap into the intensity, because there's some in all of them, the question is, can they get it out of them? Can they push them to a level that they didn't think they could go to? Can Cora do that? I don't know. I don't think any of us do. He's got a better shot at Farrell than Farrell, though, because they couldn't relate to Farrell. They can relate to Cora. And I can tell you, with reasonable certainty, how's that for coaching him, Murray? That's pretty good, right? With reasonable certainty? That there is one area I think where Cora is going to make a difference.
The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub. From the field.
You're the one who threw the pitch.
To the clubhouse.
You're a reliever short.
To the corner office.
That sends all the wrong messages.
We have the Sox covered.
Because that's the way I look at it.
The Baseball Reporters on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Dave and Swampska. Dave, what do you got?
Yeah, what's going on, Mess? You talked a lot about intensity today. I mean, last year we talked for weeks about clubhouse leadership, and I don't think the roster has changed that much. I don't know why we're not really talking about it anymore. I don't know what kind of leader JD is or Alex Cora. I'm kind of looking for Benintendi to step up. I know he's young, but, I mean, I want to get your opinion.
Okay, so look, the leadership thing, Dave, is a legit question, and I still think that Mookie's got it in him. I do. And when I talk about intensity, Mookie strikes me as someone who's got a lot more inside of him than he's showing us. And I'm basing that on the way he's approached his contract negotiations with the Red Sox. Mookie has been with the Red Sox now for 3 years. And he has never once really signed a deal with them. And when I say that, I mean that last year in spring training, he didn't have any leverage, but they went to him and tried to negotiate a deal, and he wouldn't take it, and they ended up going through a process which they called renewal, which means they give him a salary, and he takes it, and that's it. They offered him a five-year, $100 million deal, and he said no. This year, they went to him and tried to settle before arbitration, and he said no. He went to the case, and he won. So he's turned them down in a long-term deal. He's turned them down in an arbitration settlement. He has taken them to a hearing. And that's how I look at it. So Mookie's got a thing in his personality about, no, I'm worth more than that. I would love to see it come out. So again, I'm not telling you these guys don't have some competitiveness in them. They have to. They're athletes. They're ball players. Of course they do. The question is, how do you get them to let it all hang out on the field? How do you get them to just air it out? And so what if the opposition's pissed? Who cares? They'll get over it. The 2004 team, and I keep citing that team because they changed managers and won, and I don't think it was because Francona was a great manager. Grady Little got in the way. That team had makeup. They lacked some pitching, just like this team lacks some power. But I don't know if this team has the makeup that team back then did. And I wonder, but Mookie to me has got some, Mookie's got some fight in him. I'd like to see more of it in the clubhouse. Andy's in Hanover.
Maz, I just want to congratulate you on being the biggest flip-flopper in the state of Mass since John Kerry. I remember when you were with the Globe when we got Farrell from Toronto. You were high on life, and here you are saying in his first year, he got in his own way. He won the World Series. The guy had guy's got no personality. I want to challenge you. Can you tell us what Dombrowski has done right for the Red Sox? Because this guy scares me. I could spend John, whatever his name is, John Henry's money better than he could.
So, Andy, I don't know. Do you like the Chris Sale deal?
Love the Chris Sale deal.
Okay, so does that one count?
Yeah, I don't like paying for Pablo Sandoval, who ate himself out of baseball.
Okay, so look, I am not telling you that Dombrowski's done everything right, because I don't think he has. And a lot of the moves he made have been obvious ones. By the time John Farrell came back from Toronto, by the way, I don't think I was at the Globe anymore. Just my 2 cents. I mean, you can accuse me of things, and most times you might be right, but I wasn't at the Globe when that happened. And when they hired Farrell, I said he was the right guy for that point in time. And I don't think I'm rewriting history. They needed someone stable because of the instability at the end of 2011 and then with Bobby Valentine in 2012. They needed a known commodity. They needed something that would stabilize them. Now, that said, when we watch him in the postseason, could he manage a game? No. No, but it didn't really matter. See, I think the manager's overrated. I'm consistent with this. I think the manager is largely overrated. Players win games, players lose them. A manager can hurt a team more than he helps it, which is why I think the dismissal of Farrell is more important than the addition of Cora. And I believe that until Cora can get these guys to go to a level that I haven't seen yet. That's what I'm worried about with these guys is the intensity. Patrick's in Worcester, go.
Oh, hey, Tony. Thanks for taking my call. Regarding the intensity of the team, I was curious, like, what are your thoughts on, like, what could light a fire under these guys? Because last year, watching some of them at bat, it looked like they were the spokespeople for Prozac. So I was just looking for your thoughts on it.
So, Patrick, the answer is I don't know. Can you turn a guy who's more passive by nature? And by the way, in the real world, that might not be a negative attribute. Maybe you're better off being a little bit more passive and saying, let's not flip out over everything. Can you take a guy who is wired that way, who's a little bit more passive, and can you get him to be more aggressive and a little bit more type A? Because I think that's what this team needs. They need someone who's really going to take the team by the throat and say, no, we're not going to lose. Not going to happen. Instead of saying, it's a long season. Because to me, there's got to be a balancing mechanism in that clubhouse.
It also has to be a position player, too. I mean, to me, thinking about it, the candidate should be Chris Sale, but that really never happened last year. So, I don't know, positionally, I'd like to think maybe Mookie Betts has it in him. I don't know. Like, one of these guys has to have a moment where it's like, enough. I've put in all this work. This is what I do for a living. I have to care a little bit more here. You know, I can't just face another postseason loss, and that's getting knocked out in the first round with a shrug like they have the last 2 years.
I mean, are they in it just to have good careers and have good years, like Mookie Betts said in that interview, and ultimately get good contracts?
That's what it feels like.
Or are they in it to win? Are they in it to win? Because this is one of the things we talk about with guys who are really successful, and by that I mean they win a lot. The winning is how they get their money, not the other way around. Right? It's not them. They don't play for the money. They get the money, and they love the money. But ultimately, they're competitors, and they thrive in that environment. Do these guys have it? And my answer is, I don't know. And some of them, no manager could get through or get through to. Like Hanley, you say, how can you get Hanley to focus? And believe it or not, I actually think that Alex Cora has a chance here. So we're going to play you a cut. Jimmy, was this today or yesterday? What was this? Today. Alex Cora was talking about Hanley. Hanley's played more first base this spring than he played all of last spring. In fact, I think he's played more first base this spring than he played first base all of last year. There's been no bitching about it. Hanley seems to be doing a perfectly acceptable job out there. And then I heard this cut from Alex Cora this morning. And I got to set it up a little bit just to explain to you what they were talking about. The Red Sox apparently have charts that indicate when they go into a shift and when they don't, based on the pitcher who's on the mound, which makes sense. David Price is going to pitch a guy a certain way, and Stephen Wright's going to pitch him some way completely different. So what you're going to hear is Cora talking about a certain matchup when Price is on the mound, and then they change pitchers, and what the infielders did in terms of shuffling around. Some guys got it right, and some guys made mistakes. And you can guess who got it right and who made mistakes. Doesn't mean you'll be right, but you can guess. Here's Cora.
We have the cards for the starters and relievers. Price pitches, we take him out. Hanley is the only infielder that changes his card to the reliever. The other guys kept Price's. Kepler comes up, and with Price, he's supposed to be shift, a hard shift. And you see Bogarts and Nunez move into the shift, and Hanley gets off the line. So we had Hanley here, Nunez there, and Bogart, like, it was an awful triangle. And Febles is like, hey, Hanley, you got to move. And he's like, nah, check the card. So, I mean, if Hanley's buying into the defensive alignments, we're fine. So,
okay, so the point is, Hanley got it right. And it's a little hard to follow, but the name you hear at the end, Fabless, is Carlos Fabless. He's the new third base coach, former infielder. He's a second baseman with the Royals. He was in the Red Sox system as a coach for a long time. I think he may even manage at AA. But Fabless now sets up the infield defense. So Price is on the mound, and you heard Cora say Kepler, which is the outfielder with the Twins. I think it's Max Kepler, right? So Kepler comes up to bat. Price is on the mound. Or rather, Price had just left the game. Bogarts and Nunez shifted as if Price was still on the mound. Hanley shifted in an opposite direction. So Carlos Fabless yells out to the infield and says, hey, Hanley, you got to move. And Hanley says, no. I got it right. They got it wrong. Check the card. And Hanley was right. Hanley was right. And I heard that and I went, Hanley's working with Cora. And I think Cora can get through to Hanley. I mean, there doesn't appear to have been any dust-ups with Hanley this spring at all. There haven't been any health issues with Hanley this spring at all. Hanley has played first base, doesn't feel like there are any egregious mistakes, and there's been no bitching overall. Now, look, it's a contract year, but honestly, with Hanley, does it matter? His final contract year with the Dodgers, he hit 13 home runs. The Red Sox gave him $88 million. He missed a ton of games that year. I think he had 70 RBI. Hanley's not exactly the kind of guy that gets motivated for a contract year. But he did get motivated the year he had to play first base because it was David Ortiz's last year. And Ortiz got through to him. And he played for Ortiz. Cora's from Puerto Rico, from the Caribbean. Hanley's Dominican. I think that there is a certain kinship there. And Latin players in baseball relate to one another, whether generally speaking, whether they're Puerto Rican or Venezuelan or Dominican. And I think Cora has been able to get through to Hanley. Now, look, there's no way to know for sure. But it sure looks like if there is a huge place that Cora can make a difference, Hanley might be one of them. And the young guys on the team, who clearly were having trouble connecting with Farrell, maybe they can connect with Cora. And maybe that ability to communicate will allow them to open up a little bit and to, again, let it all hang out. And I think this is all related to the same thing. These guys have talent. The Red Sox are a good team. The question is whether they have it in them to allow themselves to be really great. Because if you say to me every guy on this team, or pretty much every guy, has a good year or above expectations, meets or exceeds, I think they can win it. I'm not telling you they're a favorite. They're probably not as good as Houston. They're probably not as good as the Yankees. They're probably not as good as the Dodgers or the Cubs. But if they play to their ability or above it, can they win the whole thing? My answer is yes. As to where the Red Sox are in the hierarchy, it's an interesting thing on ESPN today that I thought separated the teams in the majors pretty well. We'll get to that and get your thoughts on it, and then we'll wrap it up.
The Baseball Reporters with Tony Maz, 98.5, the Sports Hub. The show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I actually held a dance practice yesterday.
You held dance practice yesterday? Who was it? Who attended?
The outfielders. And came up with a dance that I proposed a dance that I think we should do.
So, but that brings me to Steve in Rhode Island. Steve, what do you got?
Yeah, two quick points just to go off of actually the snippet that you just played and the David Price thing about leadership. I mean, maybe this is a win, dance, repeat team. Maybe there isn't any intensity. And, you know, do we really want David Price being the face of this team, the leadership of this team, you know, with the attitude that he had last year?
Okay. Yeah, so, Steve, look, the Price thing last year was, you know, that was an embarrassment. That whole thing was a joke. They acted unprofessionally like a bunch of clowns and, frankly, losers. And that mentality ultimately will get you what it got you. Your talent will get you to a certain point. But then if you're not going to fight, you'll lose. You'll lose. And if you don't accept accountability for what you are, then you lose. The teams that ultimately win believe that they can go a little bit further. And so, I don't know, are the Red Sox one of these teams forever with this group that will show up and say, well, we won 93 games last year. What are you guys bitching about? Or are they one of these teams that will show up in the clubhouse after losing to the Astros in the playoffs like Xander Bogaerts did and saying, well, we did win a game this year in the first round. Are they going to be one of those? Or are they going to be a team that shows up and says, 93 wins is all well and good, but nobody remembers teams that win 93 games if they don't win the World Series. Nobody remembers them. They just look at them and say, yeah, they didn't fulfill their talent. Because that's how I look at them. I think they're capable of more. They're capable of more. I don't know any other way to say it. The question is whether they want to be capable of more, or they're just going to do what they do, win their 93 games, get into the first round, and get their ass kicked again. So ESPN had a story today sort of putting all the teams in Major League Baseball on a level, saying they had to accomplish certain goals. Win the World Series, Cubs, Dodgers, and who was the third one? Astros. The Red Sox were two levels below. And what I'm telling you, and we said this last night, Murray and I were talking about it, I want them in that top group again. And to get there, they have to be able to push and win in the postseason. And when I say win, I'm not even expecting a World Series this year. Just show me that you belong in that first group. Because you have the highest payroll in baseball and one of the better baseball markets in America. Show me that you belong in the first group. The rest I can live with. I lived with it my whole life, for crying out loud, until 2004. There were too many years in there where they didn't go far enough. Now they can. That's what I'm looking for.
The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub.